Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Hey, I am delighted to invite an author on our air this morning whose book is not yet out. It's going to be out next month, but I'm excited enough about it that I'm kind of jumping the gun. Dr. Anton Troyer is the author of a book called The Language Warriors Manifesto, How to Keep Our Languages Alive, No Matter the Odds. Anton, good morning, and thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
The Language Warriors Manifesto, Keeping Our Language Alive No Matter the Odds, sounds really defiant in a good way. You titled it that, no doubt, on purpose. What's that about?
Sure. There's a lot going on in our world right now, in a time when we're seeing the proliferation of and a half a dozen major world languages, and of the almost 7,000 languages still spoken in the world, 2,500 in mortal peril, and many others threatened in various different ways. There's a lot at stake when a language goes. A language embodies the unique worldview of a people, and it's central to identity and many, many other things. So in response to this worldwide phenomenon, which I think everybody, even somebody, you know, a white English speaker in a country like America whose language is not endangered, often still feels like the world's changing really fast. And many people, I think, are struggling with the fear of cultural imperilment, of which language is one dimension. And in response to this, there have been many people all over the world who have been working, striving, and some with incredible and inspiring success to revitalize their languages. The Maori of New Zealand have brought theirs back from the brink. Hawaiians, Native Hawaiians have. At their lowest point, we're down to 1,000 speakers, and their language was illegal for use in public schools. And today, it's one of the official languages for the state of Hawaii. There are over 20,000 speakers. There are 22 Hawaiian medium schools, and you can go to school, not just K-12, but even college, with an entirely Hawaiian medium educational experience if you want.
Wow.
And so looking at these success stories and the human beings who are driving them, those things don't happen by accident or wishing things well. There are real, live language warriors who are making those things happen.
So thoughts and prayers are not going to bring a language back.
No, it never does. And, you know, the world has never been a fair place. You know, even today as we have this conversation, you know, there's a million or so people who are starving to death. And it's not because of their bad choices and bad morals so much as being born in a different part of the world. And so we have to take the hand of cards we've been dealt in life and play them the best way that we can. But if that's the only thing we do, then we're essentially validating, you know, systems that are so horribly unfair. So while we have to play the cards we get, we also have to work to change the rules to the game. And I see the efforts to stabilize and revitalize indigenous languages as something that is a value not just for those indigenous language communities, but for the rest of the world. Why would we think that any one culture or language is going to house the solutions to all of the problems that we face?
One of the interesting things about language, as I look at my history and make some assumptions about your history, I know that my dad knew both of his grandparents on both sides that had immigrated from Norway and Sweden. I know that his parents spoke a little bit of Swedish and a little Norwegian, but the idea of speaking those languages at that time was, oh, that was old-fashioned, and no, we speak English, this is America, and so they let that go, and there aren't any you know, my father didn't grow up speaking either Norwegian or Swedish, just a handful of words. The parents used those languages to communicate about things about the kids when they didn't want the kids to know what they were saying.
Sure.
But there was a whole different attitude about hanging on to that language. That wasn't anything they needed in this case.
Right.
Your Ojibwe relatives, on the other hand, were forced, perhaps literally at gunpoint, and by law, to abandon their language. What is the difference? What happens to a family and to a people when they voluntarily elect, perhaps, to let go of a language, and when a language is stripped from them by someone else?
Right. So, first of all, except for indigenous people, whether immigrants came here voluntarily, involuntarily, or under some kind of duress, there's a process of disconnecting from mother land and disconnecting from mother culture and tongue. And different groups, you could look at, you know, the Amish or others that have tried very hard to freeze culture and language at a certain point in time. No one's ever truly succeeded in freezing anything in time. We're always shifting and changing. That's part of the human experience. But, you know, I don't know, my wife is from the, you know, Swedish-American tribe. And in our conversations, she talks about, even though her ancestors made this choice voluntarily to come here and to abandon mother land and mother tongue, that there's still a deep sense of loss, and that an effort to reconnect with those things is vital to identity. And I think especially pronounced for those who did not voluntarily, you know, give those things up in order to obtain a sweet piece of American apple pie. The pressure on those language groups feels really different. It feels like an ongoing effort to eradicate us. And so standing up to that is really standing up to genocide and the efforts to complete our erasure. But it's more than that, you know, embodied it, you know, our language is the tool we use to conduct funerals, life ceremonies. It embodies our unique worldview, and there is so much at stake. And to see what happens when we're able to successfully revitalize a language is so empowering and beautiful and healing. And all of us humans from all groups could use more healing.
What is it like for you? It sounds like you had the option growing up. Your father was German, your mother Ojibwe. You had the option growing up, and you heard both languages. And yet do you speak German?
No, I'm not a fluent German speaker.
But so you chose to pursue Ojibwe, and you chose to become fluent in Ojibwe. What about your kids? Are they fluent Ojibwe speakers?
You know, it's a great question. I guess I would first of all say I didn't necessarily choose not to pursue German so much. I think my father was a transplant from Austria who lived on an Indian reservation, and, you know, his children kind of grew up brown and braids in a native space. And so I think those things impacted me a lot,
right,
although I'm deeply impacted and influenced by my father's experience and identity, too. With my own children, I do speak Ojibwe to them, and my oldest daughter in particular is really a good speaker now. She actually is part of a team that's working to revitalize Ojibwe by developing children's books in Mille Lacs. And so she sits down with fluent speakers and, you know, takes through dictation or records stories and transcribes and things like that. And my other children, I would say, you know, aren't quite at the same level, but I do feel like the seeds are planted and they've been growing in these directions too. So we'll, as a parent, I feel like my job is to open doors and it's up to them to decide which ones they walk through. And it's been very heartening to see as they do walk through culture and language doors.
One of our dear friends here at the station, Mimu Samala, of course, is from Finland and has raised her kids bilingual, speaking interchangeably in Finnish and English to the kids. And so I guess I pay attention to these articles when I see them, and they really do talk about how good it is for kids to learn language. And kids learn language so easily. It almost makes you weep how easily they learn language when they're younger.
Yeah. You know, there are a whole basket of variables that impact language learning, but it is true that children are learning and growing so fast. Even if they're a monolingual speaker, they might come into kindergarten and they, you know, they're learning a letter. And sometimes by second grade already, they're reading Harry Potter. And there's this explosion of learning and acquisition, and it especially revolves around language. And all of the science and studies say that learning or knowing another language enhances cognitive function, you know, brain development, and all kinds of things. So we've just been amazed by some of the results. You know, there's an Ojibwe language immersion school, which is just across the border in Wisconsin on the Lakota Ray Reservation. And they've just done something that I consider quite miraculous in a community where they really haven't been raising fluent speakers of Ojibwe since World War II. They've got maybe 125 kids who've been coming through the program who run around on the playground and holler at each other in Ojibwe and they're fluent speakers. And among the many benefits are that those children outperform their Ojibwe peers who are in the English medium schools, either Hayward Public Schools or the main school, Bureau of Indian Education school on the reservation. So the kids who are taught all day, every day in Ojibwe are testing out better in English.
Do you have a sense that part of that, I'm wondering what you attribute that to. Is it just perhaps the way learning a different language maybe activates different parts of the brain, or does it have to do with identity?
I think it's both. Certainly the science says, you know, learning another language enhances, you know, your entire, you know, the function of your entire brain. But I think Native people in general have had a really painful historical experience in education and have often felt like, you know, just through the absent narratives, the things people don't teach and don't talk about, and who's not physically present in an educational experience. I never had a single Native teacher in my educational experience, and never had a teacher of color except for one Black teacher, entire K-12, college, master's, up to my PhD. And these are common experiences. But something that happens if you're centering, you know, in this case, Ojibwe language and culture, is that you necessarily have to have some Ojibwe people who are at the center of the delivery mechanism. And so you get role models and you get people you can emulate and, you know, you are spoken to in your learning language and in your cultural language, and the acquisition of the linguistic language naturally follows. And instead of education feeling like an assault on your very identity and way of being, it feels like support and positive identity development. And I think a lot of times other Indigenous learners might, and this is certainly how I felt like it was an assault on my very way of thinking and being. It wasn't okay to be me. And so people react to that with kind of fight, flight, and freeze, you know, our old caveman responses. And so everyone's scratching their head saying, why do we have a truancy problem at this school? And I'm thinking, flight. And why do we have a discipline problem with these Indigenous learners? And I'm thinking, fight. Or how come those Indigenous learners seem kind of zoned out and they're not paying attention? I'm like, freeze. But when you center Indigenous language, culture, it just flips the script and it turns those kids on to everything in the academic toolbox.
Anton, I wish we had so much more. I've got so many more questions. I wish we had so much more time to talk about this. But thank you so much for giving us the time that you did this morning. Your book, The Language Warrior, is going to be out next month. It's called The Language Warrior's Manifesto, How to Keep Our Languages Alive No Matter the Odds. It's going to be out next month. And I hope we have the opportunity to have another conversation about this book because there's a lot here to unpack.
I look forward to that. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Dr. Anton Troyer, our guest this morning on Minnesota Reads. Once again, his book, The Language Warrior's Manifesto, How to Keep Our Languages Alive No Matter the Odds, will be released from the Minnesota Historical Society Press next month. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.